Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Umar Fagan, I'm VK Fagan, sitting in for Cam Ruslan on a special all-musical episode of A Bit of Culture, because I'm joined, of course, by two musicians. I've got Azmil Yuno.
Hello.
And Fikri Fazil. It's been a long time, Fikri.
Yes, yes.
Welcome back to A Bit of Culture. And I say all-musical because our topics today are topic number one, fatherhood and rock and roll, lyric Melayu, and movie soundtracks, right? Jeez. We're going to kick things off with Azmil Yuno, who has recently become a dad. He's always been a rock and roller. So, Azmil, talk to us about fatherhood and rock and roll. How has one changed the other?
Yeah, I mean, one influences the other. It's hard to say which has a greater power over which. But of course, I got a feeling fatherhood has an effect on rock and roll, because for me, the perspective is quite interesting, because I play in several bands. I've been one band where all the other guys are bachelors, no kids. Then another band, everybody before this, they were all parents, and finally I get one, like, hey guys, I'm one of y'all. But I'm in the other gang, I'm like, bye-bye, sorry man, I'm different now. I mean, when you think about rock and roll, I mean, a lot of images come to your mind about, what rock and roll do, the single, it's supposed to be this and that. There's a lot of perceptions and assumptions we make about rock and roll music. It's rebellious, It's
quite a stereotype.
It's a stereotype, yeah. You become it's caricatured, it's interesting because, I'll be going gigs and I meet some musician friends that, the conversations have changed.
Well, Azmil, you were always, you always sing about the working man's plight, right? In a lot of your lyrics. And what's interesting, of course, is you're a father of twins, which means you have even less money.
Yes. You gotta play double the gigs now, man.
Has it sobered you?
It has. It has. I've always been telling friends, it's given me a greater sense of purpose. I mean, before this, the purpose could be, something just like, this drive. But now, very clear, I've got to go back because I got to feed the twins. I gotta buy this and that. See you guys. And I've noticed one thing. I was gigging in Penang last year and had some friends who had kids recently too, musicians. Another table, all the single guys. And we got to the venue after the gig to just hang around, catch up. We just split into two. So one table, the guys were the recent parents, and the other ones, all the single guys. And we're talking about different things. And I don't know which is cooler. Maybe we're not that cool anymore, but the other table will be cooler. But it does, man. It does change your recklessness. Creatively, I think there's still room for recklessness. Look at guys like Tom Waits. He got weirder after he set up his family. Got
That's
a family
a good point. Because Fikri and I aren't parents.
No.
Not yet,
hopefully
anyway. Not that we know of.
So, yeah, it's how do it's not something, you should try it out, no? Tell me, it's hard for me to get to that, yeah.
But that is becoming, fatherhood and rock and roll, at least in Malaysia, is becoming quite a norm. Like, if you go to shows, there are a lot of kids as well. Guys bring their wives and their kids. Yeah. So it's quite normal, especially in festivals and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's starting to become like a family thing.
That's
now.
True.
Yeah.
And it might make festivals a lot more well equipped, because suddenly bands come, hey, I got a family. So they gotta make things safer, facilities must be there, because this guy's coming in with the kids. They're the big band. They're the major band. They're being
I don't
family.
Know, like, you tell that to Ozzy Osbourne. I don't think someone sent him that memo.
Well, probably his wife did.
I don't know. I keep thinking about it. I mean, I've got no, high ground to speak from, right? When it comes to these sorts of things, I can't even give any advice because I'm neither a dad nor a musician. But I was trying to think, when you said that you were going to do this topic, I was trying to think of, I guess, major rock and roll artists that I know of and whether fatherhood kind of changed their music. And I think for me, one of the biggest shifts that I saw was probably with Lennon. and the kind of, you know, lyrically, suddenly it became such an integral part of his songwriting. Yep. And it was very interesting with Lennon as well, because of course, between Sean and Julian, and the estrangement there as well, between the two sons as well, you know, made for very interesting, I guess, a songwriting dynamic. And then Paul McCartney comes in, you know, supporting one son. And like, I think that's really interesting when it actually flows into the music in that way.
That's true. Even the band members among themselves, the dynamics change, you know, when somebody, everything changed, your schedule changes, you know.
Damn you, that, Yoko.
Yeah.
I joke.
So you got to jam on Sunday afternoons.
She didn't break up the Beatles.
So.
Sorry?
Do you have to jam on Sunday afternoons?
No, actually for me, it's easier to jam on weeknights.
Oh, weeknights.
Yeah, weekends, family time.
Oh, that's good.
So, yeah.
No, because I've got another friend who has like two kids now. He only jams Sunday afternoons.
On weekends,
only Sunday afternoons. What, for like 4 hours straight or something like that.
Yo, cow. And I was like, now you understand why they got this marathon jamming thing. Because that's why I can't fit, guys.
Well, but, no, it changes. I guess it changes your performance and style as well, right? I mean, Asmael, you're also a lecturer by day, and you teach fertile young minds.
Yes.
And I guess the sad thing is when musicians actually give up being musicians when they become parents, because the realities and practicalities of life suddenly kick in.
Yep. And yeah, I don't want to be a tiger parent too. Like, I'm a musician and I've got my kids there. Hey, play a guitar. Every day play music to them. Even that's happening now because my music's always around there.
You know, wait. Hold on. Your twins are not one yet, right?
They're one.
They just won.
One. Yeah,
so what kind of music are you playing for them?
I've been playing a lot of rock and roll, actually. Yeah, so they love it. One twin, the daughter, she's got a natural vibe in her. She's dancing, moving around, and they're messing around the guitar. I've been recording that. Sounds like stuff I used to do for my experimental stuff. It's like, wow, they're better than me. Because there is absolutely pure just touch on the guitar. While we're doing experiment, we're going to like think, oh, this is. So it's refreshing to see that this joy that they get just whacking the piano, is like that abandon, you know. So I see that as a, it can regenerate you in your paradigm of thinking about as a musician. I think that's, for me, the changes comes more to that. That you find that, okay, you're thinking differently about music. And I'm reflecting more on my songs. So like, what was I thinking writing? What? Why would I let my kids listen to this song that I've done? Or maybe they should. And I tell them the story of that. I don't know, maybe.
Well, from Fatherhood Rock and Roll, we're going to move on to Lyric Melayu. Fikri, what brought this on? Is it the post-Hari Raya mood?
No, not really. So I've been trying to dabble myself into music writing myself, you know, from songwriting to lyric. And I have taken up a mission to write all my songs in Malay. I think in English, but writing songs in Malay has proven to be extremely difficult for me. And then I remembered a conversation I had with a friend who is quite a senior in the music scene. He could speak several languages quite fluently. And he said that if you wanted to speak in English, you have to think in English. If you wanted to speak in Malay, you have to think in Malay.
Yeah.
If you want to speak in Japanese, so on and so forth. So that has kind of forced me to really study language, the Malay language. And I think me and Azmil, we had this conversation earlier about, okay, so language, words, they are a window to the community itself. So the Malay community, for instance. And if you look at popular mainstream music, all the lyrics right now or previously are very beautiful and very kind of delicate. But as of recent, in the last couple of years, it has become quite brash, you know, to follow the Western idea of what lyrics should be.
Define brash. I mean,
You know how English, it's very clinical. It's very like straight to the point. But in Malay, if you wanted to present an idea,
there's a certain sense of hallowness.
Yes, which is the beauty of the culture. And I was watching this film the other day, Kembara Seniman Jalanan. So M. Nasir played this character. His name is Bujang. You know, the typical story of budak kampung coming to KL, trying to find a record deal. He makes it and blah, blah, blah. But there was this one scene where he was trying to court this girl at an art gallery. He spoke about musical influences. So he said that, I was influenced by the 60s. So Pop Ye Ye, A. Ramli, John Lennon, you know, to the Western stuff, right? But he also reminded himself that even though I am influenced by them, I remember that I am Malay. So that's why. And I think even though that character is fictional, it does translate to who he is, M. Nasir, as a songwriter, that he managed to kind of find that narrow pathway from a lyric point of view that just kind of really people just kind of embrace on a popular level, you know?
That's so interesting, yeah. Because as a songwriter myself, when I started writing Malay, I had a very clear thing about what I did not want to do. I didn't know what I wanted to do with the lyrics, but when I started trying out writing Malay songs, initially was, I just know one thing. I wanted it to sound like how people speak. So when I was growing up, Bahasa Baku was being forced on us. Everybody has this, and you know, and I notice people is make fun. Hey, people don't speak like the drama series. Lah. People don't speak like this. And then, okay, I'm going to write songs. I'm going to sing that way. I'm going to, the ah will be you know, because when we speak Malay in a colloquial. And, you know, like, I think a lot of some Indonesian listeners find my songs quite amusing because of the because it's very Malaysian, you know. And you realize, hey, oh, I've hit something that, you know, is very Malaysian, you know. So, but later on, then only start dealing with, like, themes and how do I write things. And, you know, sometimes Malay words are, there are a lot of Malay words that doesn't get used. And that's also what I like to do.
I discovered, like, studying some lyricists that in the Malay language, we tend to humanize things. Say, for instance, digenggam rindu, for instance, right? So the emotion is humanized. It's quite interesting to see.
You're grasped by it.
But who is grasped? Yeah. You know, like,
That's really cool. Wait, so I'm curious though, what did your friend tell you about thinking in the language you want to write in? Because if you find that you think in English, I mean, is it easier as a process for you to write in English and get it translated, or is it a challenge for you then, like a challenge to yourself to say, you know what, I'm going to try my hand and keep trying Malay?
The second one. Sorry, no. Because I just wanted to challenge myself from a creative point of view. And not to say that I am a kacang yang lupakan kulit. It's just that, you know, we grow up speaking in English. And
we do, but also arguing it's a skill set. Ideas it's a skill set that you don't necessarily use. I mean, I think when I'm speaking in BM, I think a little bit in BM because I know I'm not constantly translating from English to Malay in my mind, right? I can speak Tamil, but I know that I'm translating from English to Tamil because I'm out of practice and I'm out of touch. And even though I can read, write, and speak, it's not something that comes naturally to me. And at the same time, I think, you know, it's a practiced skill because, Fikri, you, Azmail, we all spoke BM growing up. The both of you probably more than me. And I think it's like riding a bike. The more you practice that skill, it's just going to come back to you because that language doesn't go away.
But what I find interesting is that the different angles or different point of views, if you write in Malay, it's very different than...
Because the poetry is different.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the way you present the poetry is different.
Writing Malay, is like the syllables, Malay words are longer. You know, the syllables are longer. So to express certain things, you know, you got to find a different rhythm. So I've come out with rhythm, melodies that are very different that I couldn't have come up with in English. And writing Malay is a challenge for me too. Even though I think in bilingual, but yeah, it's that. It's quite interesting.
I think it ties back into the idea or that discussion of everyone about that Malaysian sound.
What is that Malaysian sound?
I don't know if I'm in the right path or not, but I've discovered that potentially it could be that cadence, the rhythm of the word.
It's not necessarily a sound, but you know how something is said, how it's expressed. You know?
And most of the time, you cannot really put in a Western template onto, say for instance, you've never heard Brit Rock in Malay, right? Rarely, very rare.
Zainal Abidin rendition of I Love Rock and Roll. Have you heard that? It's like a rendition of the Joan Jett song.
Something I was forced to do, probably.
Must be, but really weird. Because it's Saya Suka Rock and Roll.
Saya Suka, yeah.
No one says that.
No one says that, right? And also, Suka and love have different connotations. It's like, I like rock and roll.
And when you're rock and roll, you don't have to say Saya Suka. You just go, yeah, rock and roll! You don't have to say Saya Suka. You know?
Saya Suka Rock and Roll seems like a letter from, you know, the government or something.
Like, please declare that. Yes,
and it sounds weird. And you're right; it's because of the number of syllables as well. It makes a huge difference. You know, when it comes to translating works, even literary works, a BM version of an English translation is about 20% longer.
The books are significantly longer because I think they're
just more words, even maybe longer words, so it takes up more space on a page.
All the kata kerja and all the kans among, you know, so it's really interesting.
But I think that's why I look back into like the pre-Bahasa style of communication.
Yes.
Where it just uses like four lines. It hits.
It's hard, man.
It's hard.
And there's a lot of sindiran. And these are things that is very unique to the Malay language. And I think one of the reasons why I started writing Malay is also I want to put some pre-bahasa in. I spent years learning in school. Then you find out
You might as well make use of it.
Yeah,
right?
Use it.
God knows I'm not using calculus.
Yes, exactly. Finally, something I can do.
Fikri, you got to keep us up to date on your lyric writing, and when it's done and it becomes a song, God knows we're going to play it on A Bit of Culture, that's for sure. So from rock and roll and fatherhood to lyric Melayu to movie soundtracks, topic number 3 coming your way after this on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
And you're back with me, Uma Pagan, Ampike Pagan, Azmil Yuno, and Fikri Fazil. It's a special all music, all the time, all singing, all dancing episode of A Bit of Culture. We've been talking about fatherhood and rock and roll. Topic number one. Topic number two was Lyric Melayu. And my topic for today, topic number three, is music soundtracks, movie soundtracks. And movie soundtracks for good reason, because of late I've been watching, well, as you can tell, I've been watching a lot of movies because I do that movie show. And I've noticed there has been a kind of shift in the way we consider movie soundtracks. So there's that old adage, right, which I'm sure all of you are aware of, this idea of how a soundtrack should not be apparent, because then the composer has failed if you notice the soundtrack. It should run in the background and support the visuals, yes, right? And of course, that's not always the case, because some of the most iconic soundtracks, Indiana Jones, for example, the Star Wars soundtrack, there are tunes you can hum in your head all the time, and they're generally motivating tunes in the sense that they punctuate seriously awesome movies in the films, right? However, of late, I found that a lot more young auteurs and filmmakers growing up in the 80s and 90s, heavily influenced by movies of the 60s and 70s, have started using rock and roll in their songs. So James Gunn with Guardians of the Galaxy, Edgar Wright in the upcoming Baby Driver. You know, it's a 29-track LP, double disc. It's the soundtrack for Baby Driver. Everything from Barry White to Martha Rees and the Vandellas, right? Everything's in it. And it's a great little piece of soundtrack. But what's interesting about it is all of these songs actually punctuate really important moments in the film. They're not just background.
Right.
They're part of the story.
The way it should be.
And the same with James Gunn. He said he had these songs playing while he was writing the script. And it's interesting that there's that key song in Guardians of the Galaxy, which actually is mentioned in the movie in volume two, and it is a plot point. The lyrics from the song are a plot point. And I was curious to find out how you guys felt about this intersection, because I know some people might feel it to be a bit of a cop-out. You know, I think it's grasping a lot at nostalgia, for example. Right. I mean, I'm a fan, don't get me wrong, because I'm a sucker for that generation of music, and I love film, so it's like all of my geek fantasies coming together as one, right? But what do you guys feel as a kind of process where music and movie making and even writing comes into play?
Referring to that example, the Guardians of the Galaxy, I think it was both commercial and a creative decision. Commercial because, you know, back when the first film came out, that was just right at the point when everyone was talking about nostalgia. Everyone was talking about even Mola on a popular level.
Yeah.
After that, the Stranger Things came out.
That's right. Stranger Things came out.
So there was this whole 80s thing happening. And obviously, it's a lot cheaper to hire a music director than an orchestra.
And you know, also
they still have an orchestra, man. I mean,
I don't think so. Not for Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, probably like a smaller scale, because those guys are expensive. I'm not kidding.
But it's also an act of cultural sustainability, because as the decade goes on, we have amassed number of cultural products, which is songs. And you know, these songs get a meaning from the decades, and there's all this intertextuality between when you use the song with lyrics, and the artist's own story comes into the song. Actually, I wrote a thesis about this. My master's thesis was about pop scoring, using popular music in films. Purely because I want to do something I really love, and I did it, and I looked at films with drug teams. So I analyzed Trainspotting, Film Loading Las Vegas, and Bringing Out the Dead.
Fantastic.
And what I found from my research is this is more film studies kind of perspective of it, is that songs have different, you could say, contexts in which they exist, right? So using songs in this manner, songs that were already recorded, produced before, it's called pop scoring, apparently. So using pop songs, popular songs, not pop songs per se, as scores, which one is, yes, it's cheaper than getting orchestra. Second aspect is quite interesting, because you have, like I said, all these songs have accumulated layers of meaning through its popularity,
and recognition.
Some of the artists, and it actually becomes this very, it's richer if you have more cultural currency, understand what's going on. Yeah.
And you're right about the cultural currency, because it is layers and metaphor to your film that you don't have to write and you don't have to show. And I think that's absolutely incredible, because for me, the process involved in writing something while listening to music, whether you're writing a film or an essay or something like that, there's an interesting creative connection that happens there as well. My most basic example is, as a kid, whenever I was doing, you know Kumail and Hido? In school, you all were this same generation, right? We had to do that woodworking class and all of that, right? I kid you not, every time I was doing something in woodworking class, the MacGyver theme would be playing in my head. Because of a certain generation, that song is intrinsically linked to doing something with your hands. And it would somehow even support and influence what you were doing because of that theme in your head.
We grew up in the 80s where theme songs had that kind of
effect, impact.
And it's written that way. Theme song kind of changed later on, right? You know, so true.
But that being said, are you tired of nostalgia? Because I think that is my biggest concern with seeing this, you know, one after the other, right? Guardians of the Galaxy, Stranger Things. There's a new series on Netflix called Glow, which is about ladies wrestling in the 80s. Baby Driver's coming out. Heavy influences from action movies, musicals, and rock and roll from the 60s and 70s. Are you worried about this age of nostalgia kind of like losing its edge?
Well, I'm not in the parlance worry about this, I suppose. I'm just a consumer. We'll see this happen because it's popular. The major studios here, you'll incorporate, you'll get co-opted into it. But then you start seeing those, the people who aren't as genuine as, you know, the guys actually using the songs for actual narrative effect. Others disappear. And, you know, it'll die off again. For a while, there was that, I think like mid-90s, for a while, there was that stream of films where it used a lot of pop scoring. I think Scorsese's influence came in because using pop scoring. But it died off for a while. So, I mean, yes, nostalgia is dangerous because it supposes something that, you know, a feeling for something that might have been pleasant, but you kind of gloss it over with a bit of sepia and, you know, sounds nice. But, of course, on the other end, I think we've got the songs. Let's exploit it. You know, use it, man. Give royalties to some of these artists who I think
I'm sure
deserve it.
Yeah, I'm sure they're getting it. You know? But it's pretty good as well because the newer generation get to listen to older songs.
It's like,
because God knows the kids these days need some of that.
So I think part of these filmmakers, what they're doing, I think, is sharing stuff they love and also doing a bit of community service, you know. Listen to these guys, they're awesome. I think you don't want to listen, you listen to the film anyway.
Yeah, that's the greatest consequence of all of this. I think this discovery of all of these bands that were forgotten from the 70s and the 80s. I mean, some of them, especially the ones that aren't still around, right? You know, Bon Jovi just doesn't stop when you want him to. And, you know, I mean, Rolling Stones is still around.
This way gets interesting, though. How about a film like Searching for Sugar Man? The soundtrack's made of his own songs that were released but weren't selling in his own lifetime, but the movie came up.
Except in South Africa.
Yeah, so that's ironic.
No, but we've started playing, I mean, we started playing Sugar Man.
Yeah.
Only, I guess, Rodriguez, only after, I think after the movie, we added his songs to our playlist over at BFM. And, and you know, they're great songs. Yeah. They have that, they have that cross between like Bob Dylan and Arlo Guthrie. There's a nice little, but only he's a little more working class than the both of them put together. And you're right, it was a movie that made that happen. You know what I get worried? I get worried when less talented people do it. And that's my concern, because then the works begin to suffer. And, well, you know, take Glee, for example, and Don't Stop Believin' La. I love that song, man. True. And then they just went and ruined it for me. I can't listen to it anymore because it was played to death.
That's the danger, you see. Like
commercialization.
Commercialization. Because sometimes, you know, you love a song and you see the music video and say, I don't like this song anymore. Or you saw the music video, I love this music video, but you listen to the song, I can't separate the video from the song. So that's quite interesting, the link to the visual and your own personal imaginings of what could be.
Yeah, but it's all business, man. It's
business,
all business,
that's the thing.
That's the thing,
Best for movies,
Of all three of us, I love the fact that Fikri ends on that note. It's all capitalism, man. It's all folks, do you have a favorite movie soundtrack? If you do, tweet us at BFM Radio and let us know. It's time now, of course, for recommendations. I'm going to go first with a recommendation. So I'm reading this book now called The One Device, and it is a book that is about the history of the iPhone, because it's 10 years this year of the iPhone, and this is a great look back at all of the crazy things that had to happen for this phone to materialize. Because obviously, Apple was a company that's never built a phone before. Steve Jobs was a lunatic, obviously, as you all know. And he gave them an ultimatum and said he wanted a phone, he wanted the best phone, he wanted to challenge network providers. Because before this point, the network providers were the ones who kind of laid down the law and said, all of your phones must conform to our standards. And Apple went, no, sorry, we're going to make our phone, you better conform to us. And that literally changed everything, right? It changed smartphones, it changed the way everyone does business. It changed the way Google would start to operate, because Android is, you know, one of the biggest, I guess, influences, global influences that Google has. Even though it doesn't make them much money, their global influence is there because of Android as well. So it's an interesting book about the intricacies that went behind designing and creating the iPhone, which has become this cultural icon. Fantastic little book. It's called The One Device. It's not available in Malaysian bookstores as yet. I was reading it on my Kindle, but I've been assured by the bookstore people that it's coming soon. So it's called The One Device. Go look it up.
Awesome.
Azmil, you're next.
Okay. I'm one of those guys who still buys DVDs. So I went to Speedy recently.
Who still goes to Speedy?
Yeah, I still go Speedy. And I love digging. It's not the same looking to files and your screen. You know? So Speedy has this deal now. You buy 3 DVDs for $27. So I remember going Speedy once and saw this DVD. And second time I went there, it was gone. So recently, I was so rejoiced when I found it. It's basically Martin Scorsese's documentary about George Harrison called Living in the Material World. It's
amazing.
A double DVD, yeah. And George Harrison has been my favorite Beatle, even though I look up to McCartney and Lennon for songwriting. But he's always been the guy that had one that, you know, he was a great team player because he let the powers that be in the band go ahead.
Yeah.
And through the documentary, you also understand that, well, he was developing his own, he was as a songwriter.
Oh, he's crazy talented.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, his few contributions went up straight away. I mean, like, became like, you know, one of their later days more recognizable songs. And what I find the documentary very interesting, and again, I think it's just Scorsese as a documentary filmmaker is great. He's looking at, you know, not just his personal stories, but also his spirituality. And I think that's been something that George Harrison...
Oh, he went total Hare Krishna.
You know, went on full cow, you know. It's like, got the other Beatles to come along too, you know. But nevertheless, there's a lot of perspectives about, you know, he only had one kid, Danny Harrison. So I think that's why I also talk about parenthood and rock and roll, because I just saw the documentary the other day, and you know, he said one thing. It was like, you know, all this rock and roll life, he said, well, puts in perspective, yes, I have a kid. That's where my focus goes back to. And that's very interesting. And I think his wife gave very good marital advice. Like, people asking, how do you make a successful marriage? And she said, you don't get divorced. So, oh, okay, good advice, you know, because he's a rock star. I mean, like, of course, there's all this. But watch that documentary. It's
George Harrison
living in the material world. Yeah, it's a Speedy. Buy lah, support lah, please. Don't download. Yeah.
Sorry, like, that's the first time in the 21st century that someone has said it's at Speedy.
Yeah.
Fikri, your turn. What is your recommendation?
I would like to recommend this a song by Black Dog Bone called Hayalan. It really ties back to what we were discussing earlier about the lyrics, the Malay lyrics, because that song is a rendition of Earth, Wind and Fire's Fantasy.
Wow.
And it's a great groovy song. I wish Black Dog Bone wrote it. But I also recommend the producer Ali Joe to play us out with that song.
I was just going to say that. And I think we can get Ali to play us out. Yeah. So, yeah, we've got The One Device, George Harrison and Kailan by Black Dog Bone, which is going to play out a bit of culture. All that remains for me to do is to thank my honoured guests. Azmil, you know, thank you very much.
Merci.
Fikri Fazil, thank you very much. Are we all on Twitter? We are. I'm on at Umar Pagan, Azmil. I'm
at Azmil, Azmil.
And you are just cut off from the world.
Yeah, I'm in my own cave.
Okay. Write a letter, put a stamp, send it to Fikri Fazil, care of BFM 89.9, and we'll make sure it gets to him.
If my cat remembers the mail.
If his cat remembers the mail. Also, don't forget to check out our Facebook page, A Bit of Culture on Facebook. I think there's like 17 million likes already.
Crazy.
So, you know, be a part of the conversation, folks. Yeah. You don't want to miss out. All of that and more. Thank you so much for listening to A Bit of Culture. Kam Razlan will be back soon. I promise. He hasn't disappeared. He will be back in the country soon. I'm Umar Pagan. I'm Fikri Pagan. You've been listening to A Bit of Culture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.